their thinking, yet admired what they thought was the direct and casual way I disposed of enemies. The bigger the violence, the more they would applaud, as long as they were not threatened personally. The Radisha sent for me the third morning after Jah's death. It was a brief interview of no consequence, except that I left convinced that Smoke was more than a fakir. He'd penetrated the veil of time well enough to assure himself that I'd had a hand in Jah's disappearance. He was more frazzled than ever. For the first time, the Radisha was rattled. She saw her control slipping. That night, she and Smoke and a few followers slipped over the main and headed north. She left Swan and Mather to pretend she was secluded in the fortress. That deceit was useless. Narayan told me what was happening before the Radisha hit the water. The day was noteworthy, too, because we enlisted our first non-veterans. There were just three of them. Two were friends of Narayan's friends, but their arrival was a sign that word was spreading, and there were Taglians willing to join the cause. Drills and training continued, as intense as I could make them, always designed to strip each man of all loyalties but those to his comrades and commander. Former slaves had become the most plentiful volunteers and best students. They had nothing else. The Shadow Masters had destroyed their world. I thought it might be a good idea to send trusted men to roam the lands below the main in search of more men without strong ties to Taglios. Narayan and Sindhu told me that the Radisha was doing her sneak. I listened, then said, "Sit. The time has come." They understood. They didn't look as distressed as I'd expected. They had talked it over and had agreed to open up. "Who are you? What are you doing?" Narayan took a deep breath. He did not look me in the eye.
"Mistress, we are deceivers. Followers of the goddess Kina, who has many names and many guises, but whose only truth is death."
He went into a long-winded explanation about the goddess and how she related to the gods of Taglios and its neighbors. It was an improbable mishmash like that surrounding the genesis and attributes of most dark gods. Narayan plainly had not thought much about the doctrine. His explanation didn't tell me much, except that he and Sindhu were devoted to their goddess. It took some pressure, but they admitted they worshipped Kina in part by committing murder. Sindhu volunteered,
"Narayan, Jamadar of the Changlar Band, is famous among us, mistress."
Evidently, he broke the silence because it wasn't good form for a man to brag about his own accomplishments.
"He has given the gift of paradise to more than 100 souls."
153,
Narayan said. That apparently was not considered braggery. Paradise? You want to explain that?
"Those whose lives are taken for the goddess are freed from the Wheel of Life and ascend to paradise immediately."
The Wheel of Life was a goonie concept. You kept going around and around, rebirth after rebirth, till the good you did sufficiently outweighed the evil. Then you were allowed to escape, but not to paradise. Paradise was not a goonie concept. The goonie who escaped the wheel became one with the generative force that had created the Lords of Light, the gods, who were its champions in the endless struggle with shadow, which would be defeated only when the generative force had absorbed so many good souls it filled the universe. Shadow, of course, fought back by leading man to evil. Paradise is a Vedna.